Yes, this is Sterling from KBAQ in Phoenix calling for Morten Lauritsen.
Speaking. How are you doing, Sterling?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm great.
Well, it's nice to hear your voice. You know, when I think of you, and I was looking forward to doing this interview, I can't help but think of Washington State. I know that's...
Yeah?
And we've all had it in our hearts and our minds. Oh, so many millions of acres across the U.S. are being burned, but so much of Washington. I just wanted you to know I've had you in my heart this morning.
And it, you know, it reminded me of the years when I was working for the Forest Service as a firefighter. I actually, back in the 60s, I fought a fire in Wenatchee, and then another one later on that same summer up in the Olympic Peninsula, where I am now. And it's horrifying, and with the loss of life and hundreds of thousands of acres, it's just unbelievable. So our hearts go out to all those people, and our poor state, who's it's beyond words, really is. Have you been up here? I'm in the San Juans. Have you been up here?
I have not. No, not recently. Yeah. I was thinking, even my daughter called. She's living in near Portland now, and she drove up to Mount St. Helens. Didn't you man a station there?
Yeah. I was on a lookout. I was on a lookout near St. Helens, right in the Gifford Pinchot. Life changing for me. I was there for 10 weeks alone, and I was a young man going to Whitman College at that time, and I made the decision on that lookout following my freshman year at Whitty, which I'd not taken any music classes at all. But I made the decision in that solitary place up there above the clouds, mainly all those months. To get into music, you know, it was a time of deep reflection, and I decided at that point that music was, in fact, not going to be an avocation, but I needed to pursue it. So I went back to Whitman and took every music class I could, and then transferred down to USC, where they had a school of music, and I also wanted to be in a larger urban environment to take part in and experience concerts of all kinds. And so it was a good choice. I went there. As a young man, I was led into a beginning composition class as a junior in college, because I'd never written anything, and was given one semester to see if I could cut it or not. And I ended up, that was my life. I'm still there. I'm still teaching. I've been chair of the composition department and all that, so it was a good move. But, yeah, it's a beautiful area. I was raised in Portland, so your daughter and I have some connections on that level.
When I think of you in that tower making that decision, and forgive me, I'm sure you get this a lot, with all the music you've composed, so many of us, the front door to your music is Omnium Mysterium.
Yeah, right.
And I can just imagine, was that the kind of landscape that musically was in your head at the time, or did you had not discovered that yet?
I hadn't discovered that yet. I discovered that on Waldron Island. I worked on that little piece for 6 months to get it just right. I lost so much sleep on that piece because I don't know if you've seen the article, but I wrote an article at the request of the Wall Street Journal I was greatly inspired by the approach that the Baroque painter Zubaran took when he was painting his iconic painting Still Life with Lemons, Oranges, and a Rose, which I viewed at the Norton Simon Museum in Los Angeles. And for your listeners who don't know that particular piece, it's simply this was done in the 1500s, and it was done by the Spanish painter Zubaran, and it's simply a table with some items on it, a bowl of fruit, a rose, a chalice with some water in it, some lemons, on a table, and it knocked me flat, and I couldn't figure out why until I delved into it and researched it and came to an understanding that all these elements are symbolic of the Virgin Mary, and they're sort of a mystical offering to her. The people in the Baroque era would have understood her purity is symbolized by the water in the silver chalice. The citrons are an Easter fruit. The blossoms on the orange tree indicate renewed life. In fact, it's a votive offering to him. So to the Virgin Mary. And so I thought, oh, all right, I'm going to step in line with so many wonderful composers over time that have set the two-line text, the Vo Magni Mysterium, talking about the birth of Christ in the manger and a veneration of the Virgin Mary. And Zubaran, in his painting, was able to have an absolutely profound effect on me, a deeply spiritual connection with the most direct objects in this painting. And so I took it on myself to approach the Vo Magni Mysterium the same way, to use elements of the High Renaissance, which Solomonovich, the conductor I was writing for, was a great expert on, to connect it with religiosity, but also to use characteristics of the music of that time, and I list all of these in my article, which is posted on my website, mortonlordson.net, to try and write a piece that would connect deeply with the listeners without having to go through a whole bunch of stuff to get there, an immediate visceral reaction to a setting on those words in Latin. the difficulty I had in writing that piece was to discard things that were extraneous. It was like walking into a stadium full of notes, and then coming up with something that you could put in the palm of your hand. And elements of it, for example, a small element of that, on how do I deal with the Virgin Mary in such a situation? She lost her son. He was murdered. How do I capture somehow her pain and suffering in a very direct setting of those texts? And I lost so much sleep on that and pursued so many avenues that didn't work out. And one night I'm laying in bed and I think, I got it. On the word Virgo, which one hears in that piece, Beata Virgo, the altos have a G sharp, and it's a dissonant. It's the only note in the entire piece that's out of the key. It creates a slight dissonant on the word Virgo, and it adds a poignancy and a certain sadness, and it's over a minor triad on that word. And what it does, it points a sonic spotlight on the importance and edifies the meaning of that word. And so it was those kind of things. So I am writing this piece on a $50 piano in a shack on the beach in the San Juan Islands, a place with no electricity, no running water. I converted an abandoned general store years ago, and writing this piece, and then finally getting it exactly right. And I mailed it off on the mail boat that comes three times a week to this island to Paul Solomonovich at the LA Master Crown. Said, Paul, here is your Vo Magni. And I could tell that something very special was happening with that piece when I first heard it with L.A. Master Crowell in the dress rehearsal. One can conjure up the sound, of course, but to hear it with that magnificent chorus, I knew something special was happening. I went out and after that rehearsal, I sat in my car for half an hour saying, what was that all about? What just happened? And of course, now it's performed everywhere in the world. There are 100 different recordings of the thing, but it took a lot out of my skin to get there.
You know, when you talk about its genesis, if you will, being in a painting of that period, and I can't remember now the artist's name.
Zubaran.
When I'm trying to picture the picture, and if it's what I'm thinking of, then paintings of that time also have natural characters or character their own characteristics of light and objects occupying space, and that's what strikes me about most of your music. First time I heard Armanium, it was a different experience than the next time. It was the same music, but I was in a different place. The choir was in a different space.
Yeah,
and it's always that kind of unexpected experience, even though you know what's coming.
Yeah. There are so many postings of English choirs doing it on Christmas Eve in cathedrals. You know, young men and boys singing it by holding candles. It's quite something. So I'm so pleased that they're going to be doing that on these upcoming series of concerts they've got going for me there.
Let's talk about that, because Shining Night is the benefit that is being done for KBAQ. So thank you for that.
You're welcome.
If I'm not mistaken, that's the same name as the film that came out, 3 years ago?
Yes, exactly. About 4 years ago, right? It's won a number of best documentary awards from Michael Stillwater, and it gave me an opportunity to talk about my life and talk about the importance of things that are really important to me, including poetry, which I read every day, and I have started all of my classes for nearly 50 years, each class at USC, with a poem. That's one of the reasons I got into choral music, because it combines the most personal of instruments, the human voice, and my second great love, which is poetry. And for those of your listeners who know my output over the years, they includes 8 large vocal cycles, all multi-movement works connected with one poetic theme, oftentimes by one poet, such as Rilke or Robert Graves, or one idea, such as Night, where I combined Shining Night by A.G. and then poems by about Night by Neruda and Rilke. Anyway, it's been a joyous thing for me all over these years to just quietly, and very quietly for the most part, all these years writing music. And then things really became sort of mega in the 90s after Omanium, and then the Rose Songs, and the Lux Aeterna, and then later on Shining Night. And it's very gratifying to me to see how it's connected with people around the world. And this is something that's very important to me, too. I'm not writing in a vacuum. I am choosing my text very, very carefully, and ones that relate, I think, to the human condition in a lot of ways. We're talking about loves or the loss of love, or beauty in nature, like Shining Night or the Neruda, but based upon poem that absolutely leaves you breathless. I mean, for the opening line of the Neruda I set in translation, it says, "When I die, I want your hands upon my eyes. I want to feel their gentleness one more time." I mean, you just, and it goes on, and you just can't get any better than that. It's just, the poetry that I choose and set, to me, touches me very, very deeply, and I think one of the reasons for the popularity of my music is because it is based upon poems by some of the world's greatest poets.
How did these concerts come about? The night before Shining Night being done here at the Scottsdale Center for the Arts, you'll be at Arcosanti, yeah, with the Lux Aeterna. It looks like the musicians and the celebration, if I can call it that, is rather similar, right? Is the concerts the?
I think so. Yeah, it might be the same. I believe so. Well, I'll tell you, part of my life is traveling around the world, doing concerts and festivals of my music. I just came back recently from Ottawa, the year before in Toronto, the year before in Latvia. I've done over 100 residencies at various places, and people simply contact me, and they want to do concerts of my music, and they invite me to show up. And so I'm certainly doing that there, and I'm delighted, and I want to commend your station and the support of your listeners for sponsoring that second concert. I have a very, very close connection with KUSC in Los Angeles. I've been on that station many, many times with Jim Schweda and others. And classical radio stations such as yours are essential to our life, I feel. And I've, over the years, certainly put my money where my mouth is on that and helped to support that. And I urge your listeners certainly to continue to do that. I mean, how wonderful it is to get up in the morning and turn on classical music. It's just, and to have it throughout the day whenever one wants. And stations such as yours need desperately our support.
Are you coming as composer just to be present?
And they have quite a schedule for me at Arcosanti. I'm doing workshops. I'm giving talks. They're showing the film, the Shining Night film, 4 different times in your area there. By the way, I was in Prescott earlier this year. I had a very nice residency there with Dennis Hauser at Yavapai College. And so there's a variety of my music being done. They're doing some of the Madrigali. They're doing O Magnum Mysterium, portions of the Lux Aeterna, some settings of Rilke, Sure on the Shining Night. So I'm coming really as a speaker, as a coach for the performances, and then I'm going to accompany at the piano on a number of these things.
Oh, we're certainly looking forward to that. You said something a little while ago that people resonate to your music because of the poetry, and I'm sure there's truth in that. I'm going to throw this out, too. There are so many composers that we come to, like Brahms. We know Brahms is a symphonist, usually we're introduced to his music.
Right.
And then you find these wonderful choir leader, this great music that he composed that was so intimate. And again, you know, the poetry is at the center of that. And then you discover Hugo Wolf, Schubert, all these people who wrote songs, and then their choir leader. There's this tremendous tradition of words and music. And I think you're right in there with part of that.
Well, I appreciate that. These have been great inspirations to me. I remember as a child growing up in Portland, Oregon, being very excited one day because I was playing a piano piece and noticing the composer, Johannes Brahms, and running up to my mother and saying, "Mom, there's another fellow that's got my name because my middle name happens to be Johannes." I'm part of a Danish heritage, and that's not a run-of-the-mill name these days. But all these composers that you mentioned, they knew what to do with a line. And I talk about these composers in my talks, but I'll tell you another group of composers that needs equal mention with these, the composers that have influenced me greatly. And those are the composers of our great Broadway musical. I'll put Jerome Kern, Richard Rodgers, Cole Porter, George Gershwin, those people who knew what to do with the vocal line, in the same pantheon as the great art songwriters such as Schumann and Schubert and Brahms, because they have left us timeless melodies that's part of our individual fabric as growing up. These melodies come into us, they don't leave. And the fabric of our country's culture.
I love your making that statement because you're you. If someone like I'm say something like that, it sounds pedestrian. But the very point that this is music that will live forever. We're all familiar with music from any time, whenever you're born and your lifespan. It's going to come and go, and it's there, and we can enjoy it, but it's not going to last. And the composers you've mentioned, along with the others, that stuff's going to last.
It will.
It strikes me, too, that you mentioned writing an article for the Wall Street Journal. There was an article in the Wall Street Journal about you, I guess about the time Shining Night came out. And here you are. By this time, you're a winner of the National Medal of Arts.
Yep.
You've been a composer in residence with a Master Chorale, the Los Angeles Master Chorale, university professor, highly regarded, lauded, and celebrated music. And the article in the Wall Street Journal was the best composer you've never heard.
Well, that was a nice article. That was by Terry Teachout. But what I think he was coming from his own point of view, because perhaps he's not a choral man. Certainly in the choral world and in amongst musicians, people have heard of me. I mean, we've sold nearly 2 million scores, and I've got 200 CDs out there. So I think that he was taking it from his own personal, that maybe he hadn't heard of me. But anyway, I actually had spent some time with Terry a couple of years ago down in Florida. It was also a time I spent a little bit of time with Billy Collins, the great poet down there, too.
Mm.
But Terry's a fine writer, but that was more of an attention getter, I think, than anything else.
Well, it worked, I hope, because there's truth to that. You know, in pop culture, there's fame and there's, you know, mega fame, and we think the other way most often. I often make the comment here that there was a time, well, certainly from the time of the Baroque, through the classical era, every area celebrated its musicians, which is what's exciting about the concert you'd be doing here, coming and joining musicians from our community. Every area had its poets, its songwriters, its violinists, its guitarists, and they were celebrated. Now, if you're not if you're not famous on the national stage, you're just kind of nowhere.
You know, you've got a very, very good point there. And my dearest friend, Dana Gioia, who's, I'm sure you know that name, he ran the National Endowment for the Arts for many, many years, and I consider Dana to be a national treasure. In one of his talks, I think it was the commencement address he gave at Stanford University, he talked about that very, very point. He said, you know, 50 years ago, you could have stopped the man on the street and said and asked them, who's your favorite poet? And they would have come up with somebody. They would have come up with Robert Frost or Sandburg or T.S. Eliot or something like that. Try that today and see what happens.
Yeah, yeah. There's something about choral music and there's something about band music. Choral music especially because choristers carry their voices with them everywhere they go. They don't have to lug it on an airplane. There's an intimacy they have, but it's also true in my experience that those ensembles are the ones that are asking for new music all the time. And when it's choral literature, it seems to be more welcomed by the audience. Am I right?
Weeks. I think so. I think so. Band music, however, is the newest thing for composers these days. They are especially looking for new music. For when I was playing trumpet and all those things, the furthest we ever got was transcriptions of Wagner. But I'll tell you, people like Frank DeKelly, who I hired when I was chair of the composition department at USC, and Don Grantham and others are making a huge dent. The wind ensemble area in music is one of the hottest things happening these days.
Jim Morton, thanks so much.
You got it. Thanks so much, Sterling.